do research on the internally displaced population. So she would publish along with certain U.S. universities. And because of these publications she did, she became an enemy of the state. So she was a target of an intelligence operation of the Estado Mayor Presidencial, which is the major office for the security of the president, and that worked as an intelligence squad, death squad. So in 1990, in September 11 of 1990, she was murdered, stabbed 27 times, when she was coming out of her work. After that, my aunt, Helen Mack, started looking for justice. She was able to prosecute and have a sentence against one of the material authors and one of the intellectual authors. They were both part of the military, and the intellectual author was a colonel who is currently has escaped justice. He was prosecuted, he was sentenced, but he was never, we were never able to put him in prison. My mother was the victim of a state that would repress and generate death. And many of us are just trying to convert and change that government into a government that gives well-being and life and health, basically. So that's maybe the major reason why I've gone into politics, and now I'm an elected congresswoman, and I'm in a political party that is trying to, you know, combine ethics with politics and to have a government that is not working for the military or for the oppression or for the corrupt, but finally will start working for the people.
Lucrecia Hernandez Mack, former Minister of Health in Guatemala, now newly elected legislator in the Guatemalan Congress with the political party Movimiento Semilla, the political party of Telma Andana. The Guatemalan Supreme Electoral Tribunal announced Thursday it will hold a recount amidst fraud allegations following last elections, last Sunday's presidential and legislative elections. Well, that does it for our show. Very special thanks to Maria Taracena, Libby Rainey, and Charlie Roberts. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Desder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura, Tamari Al Studio. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
The time is 5:02 on Friday, the 21st of June. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. The KBOO Evening News is next.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Good in the Hood, the weekend of June 21st through 23rd at King School Park in Portland. Good in the Hood is a multicultural music, art, and food festival celebrating diversity and connecting people with resources and experience to strengthen the unity in the community.
The Good in the Hood parade will take place Saturday starting at North Williams and North Russell Street at 11 a.m. and KBOO will be broadcasting the festival live on Saturday starting at 2 p.m. and Sunday starting at noon. Again, that's Good in the Hood Friday, June 21st from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday, June 22nd from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday, June 23rd from noon to 10 p.m. at King School Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a morning news and public affairs director, as well as an evening news and public affairs director to manage the news and public affairs programming. For these two full-time positions, we're looking for people with proven experience in audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers with an emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. The deadline to apply for both of these positions is Monday, July 1st at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Governor Kate Brown authorizes Oregon State Police to track down missing senators.
Updates from the Extinction Rebellion PDX rally in downtown Portland.
And in international news, U.S. troops on standby in Iran.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 21st, 2019. I'm Jean Delapine.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Climate Extinction PDX is protesting at Portland City Hall at this hour. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with organizer Ken Ward about the action, current state legislative politics, and what political policies Oregon really needs to save the planet.
Well, today, Extinction Rebellion Portland and the Sunrise Movement Portland had a rally and then a direct action here in front of City Hall, where we have declared a people's climate emergency, which is really just a recognition of the actual state of things. And then the Sunrise was inside at the mayor's office demanding action at that level, and we were remain outside in the street, essentially disrupting business as usual and demanding that people and government pay attention to this biggest of all crises.
Ken, what are the reasons why you specifically targeted Portland City Hall for this action?
Well, it's a follow-up to the two actions that we did at the Zenith Energy plant, where we focused on Zenith Energy as being kind of the poster child of government inaction in the face of this crisis. We decided to come here. This is the center of government for Portland. And we're continuing to issue the Extinction Rebellion demands, the number one of which is that government tell the truth about what's happening. So that's our first demand, and it makes sense to do it at City Hall.
Hey, Ken, the eyes of the world are also watching the Oregon State Legislature, where the 11 Republican senators who should have been voting on cap and trade this week have left the state, and the governor says she's got the state police on the lookout for them to put them into cars and bring them back to the Capitol. Do you have any sense of why that's happening and how it might resolve?
Why it's happening is because the Republican Party has gone off the rails and is now anti-democratic. It's hard to imagine a more anti-democratic thing that an elected official could do. It's a tricky question for me because the bill that they are derailing, I think, should be derailed, just not for the same reasons.
Talk about that a little bit, please.
Well, a bad bill was made, as I understand it, much worse. The forest industry, which was already exempt from the entire thing, managed to get amendments, according to the news reports, that will guarantee the continuing flow of raw materials, which is precisely what we cannot afford. If we were acting like this was an actual climate emergency, we would be radically remaking our forestry practices in Oregon. That's what should be happening here. Anything short of that is just denial of a different form.
I want to follow up on what you just said and ask, Ken Ward, valve turner, radical political activist around these issues of the petrochemical industry and climate extinction, what kind of policies do you think should be passed at the state legislature, and how can our listeners support that kind of work?
Well, it's the existential political problem we face, which at this moment is offering any kinds of solutions that are in any way in keeping with the true scale of the problem. It is something I'm interested in working on, and there's a small working group of us that are looking at the possibility of using the initiative process to propose some functional level solutions. They would fail because they're too far out, and the other side would spend however many millions are required to defeat them. But I think it's very important that we begin to talk about them. We put forward some such things at the municipal level as part of this action. We'd already called for rezoning the area where Zenith is to simply move it to open space and remove them from the city. We're also calling or pointing to the success in many other cities of just shutting entire downtown areas to cars. That's one of the reasons we're on the street here with some plants, actually, with our tiny house and some plants, is to argue for how not much nicer the city would be if we did some of these simple measures, but they're still politically complicated.
What is next for your organization? For people that are listening to us right now and perhaps want to get involved, what should they expect?
Well, the first thing you do is come down here. We're still on the street in front of City Hall. So we could use more bodies. We could use some more support. And then there's a coalition of major climate organizations that has declared a strike and an emergency in September. And once we're past today, we'll start focusing on that as well.
All right. For people that really don't know much about this issue, but it is so crucial for us here in this community, what's the most important thing to know about the work you're doing and what our listeners can do to support you?
The most important thing is that if you actually pay attention to what scientists are telling us, we're very near the edge of a tipping point that will make the conditions that we live in now, that make civilization possible, it will remove them. It will put so much of our seacoast cities underwater and the rest baked and drought-filled that we simply won't be able to live as we are doing that now. That is a fact, and nobody is talking about it. So the single most important thing is that we demand from government and all institutions that they tell the truth. So that's why we're out here. And the only thing that we know at this point that might accomplish that is disruption. So that's why we're engaged in nonviolent disruptive action.
All right. Kent Ward, Climate Extinction PDX, I just want to thank you for taking a few minutes with us today, and we're definitely going to be checking in with you repeatedly in the near future. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks, Lisa. Bye-bye.
For KBU News, I am Lisa Loving.
The federal government is using facilities at Fort Sill Army Base in Oklahoma to detain 1,400 migrant children, which was used to incarcerate families of Japanese descent during World War II. In response, Japanese communities around the United States are rising up in protest, including here in Portland. The Oregon Nikkei Endowment plans a rally tomorrow at 11 a.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at the north end of Tomacall Waterfront Park, between the Burnside and Steel Bridges. For more information, go to their website, OregonNIKKEI.org.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is ending the pilot program known in Oregon as Summer EBT, or Electronic Benefits Transfer. The program, which helps lower-income kids afford meals while in school and while school is out, helped 70,000 statewide last year. Oregon Eric Tegethoff from the Oregon News Service talks with the Oregon Food Bank's public policy advocate Jeff Clean and programs manager Katie Kenton.
One in five Oregon children is food insecure, and that insecurity skyrockets during the summer without access to nutritious meals at school. Summer hunger could be worse this year because of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's decision to end the summer EBT pilot program in the state. The program provides families about $30 a month per child while school is out. Jeff Clean with Oregon Food Bank says Oregon has been a summer EBT pilot state for the past 7 years, and last year dispersed about $7.5 million in funds. He says they'll face bigger barriers to food without the program.
It was very disappointing considering that the Oregon Department of Human Services had run such a successful program for so many years. And it does mean that compared to last year, 70,000 kids will be without those benefits to help them through the summer.
About 40% of Oregon kids are eligible for free or reduced-price school meals. Families do have other options this summer. They can find the nearest USDA's Summer Food Service Program site at summerfoodoregon.org or search Oregon Food Bank's Food Finder on its website. Katie Kenton, programs manager at Oregon Food Bank, says there are 39 school pantries across the state that operate throughout the year. Last year, more than 6,000 kids were reached through this pantry network. Kenton says schools provide a familiar space for families.
We really want those spaces to be spaces where they can connect with each other and connect with the folks at their school and feel empowered to be a part of a community.
But even with Oregon Food Bank's network of pantries, Clean says it's important to bring back the summer EBT program. He says it's included in a package of child nutrition programs that are reauthorized every 5 years and were last approved in 2015.
We urge Congress to make it permanent, make it nationwide, and quickly reinstate states like Oregon that have run the program so successfully during the pilot phase.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Oregon is one of the only states that allows felony defendants to be convicted by a majority vote of their jury rather than a unanimous verdict, A petition currently before the U.S. Supreme Court claims the statute deprives some defendants of equal protection under the law. The Oregon House has approved a measure that would ask voters to overturn the state's decades-long practice of allowing split juries to convict felony defendants, an anomaly within the American criminal justice system, which reform advocates have targeted as racist. The resolution passed unanimously on Thursday. It would change Oregon's constitution to require juries to reach unanimous verdicts in all criminal cases. It now goes to the state Senate. Should it pass there, Governor Kate Brown is likely to sign and send the referendum to voters in 2020. For decades, Oregon juries and those in one other state, Louisiana, have been permitted to convict most felony defendants with a 10-2 vote.
In other state government news, the Oregon Senate convened today with only Democrats attending. That's because Senate Republicans walked out of a session on Thursday to avoid voting on a cap and trade bill. The bill would reduce greenhouse gas emissions and establish a joint committee on climate action. Governor Kate Brown on Thursday authorized Oregon State Police to track down the missing senators and bring them to Salem in order to achieve the necessary quorum to enact legislation. A spokesperson for Senate President Peter Courtney has stated that if any senator resists, they will be handcuffed. Republican Senator Tim Knopp, who represents Bend, is out of the state. In a statement to media, he did say, quote, "The only option we have is to slow down this bill and get the attention of the public, and the majority was to deny a quorum and walk out." This is the second walkout of Senate Republicans, the first being done earlier this session in protest of a school funding tax package. As for the cap and trade bill, Democrats say the measure is efficient in lowering emissions while investing in low-income and rural communities' ability to adapt to climate change. Republicans argue it will cause growing division between the liberal urban parts of the state and conservative rural areas.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. In Montana, the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes have increased the reward for information on a missing woman to $10,000. Jermaine Austin Charlo has been missing for exactly a year as of this week. Reporter Olivia Reingold talked to Charlo's family about why they advocated for an increase in the reward.
Vicky Morjo has been wondering what happened to her granddaughter for a year now.
I just don't understand how people can just disappear and nobody see it.
She's hoping that someone knows something and they can be enticed by a $10,000 reward. That's how much money the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribal Council approved for information about Jermaine Charlo's disappearance. That decision came during a June 6th meeting.
People don't want to talk because they're afraid for themselves or their families. And if they know something, people just don't come out unless they have a rebound.
Guy Baker from the Missoula Police Department says that can be true. He's the lead detective on the case.
There's obviously people out there that know what happened to Jermaine Charlo, and $1,000 may not be enough to break someone's silence or to question their loyalty to keep a secret.
But he says $10,000 might be. That's why he went with Charlo's family to ask the tribal council to increase the reward earlier this month. It was previously set at $1,000. He says he's interviewed more than 50 people, conducted over a dozen searches, and submitted evidence for investigation to the crime lab. But he's still trying to figure out what happened to Charlo. She was last seen in downtown Missoula on June 16th of last year.
Most definitely, obviously, there's more than a few nights I laying in bed trying to fall asleep, looking at the fan, wondering where Jermaine is and what happened to her. So obviously, yeah, the 16th of every month doesn't go by without me thinking about that.
But now, hope. Baker says that three or four people have already called in with tips since the reward was announced last week. I'm Olivia Reingold.
The FBI is seeking information on the murder of a Navajo woman that happened more than 4 years ago. The Navajo Times reports Amy Lynn Hansen was 25 and lived in Tehachapi, New Mexico. She was found dead in November 2014 from blunt force trauma about 8 miles south of Gallup. Hansen was last seen 2 days before her death. The FBI is offering a $1,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of those responsible. A subsidiary of a corporation owned by Laguna Pueblo in New Mexico has purchased a racetrack in Kentucky. Ellis Entertainment LLC, part of Laguna Development Corporation, confirmed this week it bought Ellis Park Racetrack in Henderson, Kentucky for $11 million. Ellis plans to invest $55 million in upgrades, including renovating grandstands and barns and adding new restaurants and bars. The Albuquerque Journal reported Ellis will also expand gaming at the facility, bringing the total number of slot machines to 1,200 by sometime next year. Starting in July, the San Juan County Commission in Utah will start holding regular meetings on the Navajo Nation for the first time. The Salt Lake Tribune reports the three-member panel will hold its July 2nd meeting 90 miles from its regular meeting space in order to provide better access for the county's Navajo residents. The Tribune reports the board plans to then rotate meeting locations. The county is the state's largest in terms of square miles. It can take 4 hours for some residents to drive to meetings at the county seat. Since the November election, the commission has a two-member Navajo majority for the first time. That came about after a federal judge ordered the county to redraw district boundaries as a result of a lawsuit first filed by the Navajo Nation in 2012. The board's only non-Navajo member opposed the rotating meeting location plan. The commission also started broadcasting its meetings live on Facebook in March. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonio Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. At 5:30 this evening, it is Counterspin. At 6 o'clock, it is Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it is The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. Your weather forecast for tonight, got a few passing clouds, otherwise clear skies and 54. Tomorrow, a few early morning clouds, then mostly sunny with a high of 76. Looks like an evening low of 56. Today in history, in 1964, civil rights workers James Chaney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner were murdered by the KKK in Mississippi while volunteering to register black voters. 41 years later, on this date in 2005, Edgar Ray Killen, former Ku Klux Klansman, was found guilty of directing the murders. He was charged with manslaughter and sentenced to 60 years in prison, where he died in 2018. The quote of the day is from Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Words can be like x-rays. If you use them properly, they'll go through anything. You read and you're pierced.
Yesterday, President Trump ordered federal assistance to supplement state and local recovery efforts in the state of Mississippi. Earlier this year in April, the state was affected by severe storms, tornadoes, straight-line winds, and flooding in the counties of Clark, Clay, Itawamba, Kemper, Monroe, Otubiha, Warren, and Yazoo. Federal funding will be available to eligible state and local governments, as well as certain private nonprofit organizations. Federal funding is also available on a cost-sharing basis for hazard mitigation measures statewide. Jose M. Guerrero has been named for the Federal Coordinating Officer for Federal Recovery Operations in Affected Areas.
The Iran Revolutionary Guard claimed to have shot down an American drone yesterday in Iranian airspace amid increasing hostilities between America and Iran. U.S. officials claim the drone was shot down in international airspace over the Strait of Hormuz. Today, the president informed the American people that he stopped a U.S. airstrike just minutes before it was to happen. He went on to comment that he canceled the military action because, upon further consideration, he felt that such a response would be, quote, disproportionate.
Last month, the Trump administration lifted steel and aluminum tariffs on Canada and Mexico in hopes to pass the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, USMCA. On Wednesday of this week, Mexico Senate ratified the agreement, replacing the 25-year-old North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador and his allies saw little opposition, with 114 votes in favor to or against the agreement. Yesterday, Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau met with President Trump to publicly show support for the USMCA. The White House claimed that the USMCA will generate $34 billion in new investments and 76,000 jobs in the auto industry. However, Democrats are seeking tougher labor and environmental enforcement provisions, and Congress has yet to sign on the agreement. In Oregon, the Coos County Board of Commissioners favors the agreement, stating that trade with Canada and Mexico is vital to Oregon's economy. We believe the USMCA is one of the most important agreements for the economic future of the state of Oregon.
President Trump boasted on Twitter Monday that next week, Immigration and Customs Enforcement will begin the process of, quote, removing the millions of illegal aliens who have illicitly found their way into the United States. He announced today that sweeping pre-dawn migrant raids will begin this Sunday and will take place in 10 U.S. cities. In February, ICE sent letters to families who already had received final orders of removal by judges in absentia, with the notification that they self-report to local ICE offices by March to comply with the orders. The upcoming raids are expected to target approximately 2,000 people, according to acting head of ICE Mark Morgan. Large-scale ICE enforcement operations are typically kept secret to avoid tipping off targets. In 2018, Trump and other senior officials threatened the mayor of Oakland, California, with criminal prosecution for alerting city residents that immigration raids were in the works. The intent, Morgan said, is to deter migrants from coming to the U.S.-Mexico border, and the operation is expected to include families who are on expedited court docket.
President Trump has ordered U.S. troops for a three-day standby following the downing of an unarmed surveillance drone on Thursday. The drone was taken down 4 miles into Iranian airspace on Thursday following repeated warnings and unanswered requests for identification. The president has approved military retaliation, but has thus far decided not to strike. As of Friday afternoon, military action against Iran would still be considered illegal under Chapter 7 of the United Nations Charter and the U.S. War Powers Resolution of 1973.
Walmart has agreed to pay a $282 million settlement to the federal government this week after a Securities and Exchange Commission investigation found the retail giant made illegal payments to obtain government permits in Mexico and Brazil. It was one of the biggest investigations ever under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which makes it illegal for American corporations to bribe foreign officials. After company officials learned of the misdeeds of their colleagues in 2005, they shut down their internal investigation rather than report their findings to federal regulators. The $282 million fine is much less than the $600 million that was originally sought by regulators of the Obama administration.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 21st, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Alex Connor, Ron Bede, and Lita. The producer is Tammy Habetes, and our engineer is Sam Bowman. The Interim Director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jean Delapine.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, it is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Cecil and Celeste take a look at the history of African-American loggers in Eastern Oregon with Pearl Alice Marsh, author of But Not Jim Crow, Family Memories of African-American Loggers of Maxville, Oregon. At 9 a.m., it's the Old Mole Variety Hour. They'll burrow deep and into the roots of the great issues of our time. At 10 on Locus Focus, host Barbara Bernstein talks with Orlando Lopez Bautista, community organizer with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon, and Bus Riders Unite about the efforts to stop fare hikes and win expansion of fareless, decriminalized public transportation. Then at 11 on a special edition of First Voices Radio, host Tokasin Ghost Horse speaks with the award-winning author, barrister, and ecocide law expert Polly Higgins for the entire hour. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm, on iTunes, and on Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you would like to become a member, and we sure hope that you would, go to KBOO.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. The time is 5:30. Counterspin is next.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, new revelations from Brazil. Whistleblower leaked records show the anti-corruption crusade, called Car Wash or Lava Jato, that put popular ex-president Lula in prison and paved the way for fascist president Jair Bolsonaro, all while being celebrated in the U.S. corporate media, may have been, as critics contended, less interested in corruption than in keeping Lula's Workers' Party out of power. It's a story about what investigative journalism can reveal and about how elite media can try and cover it right back up. Journalist Brian Meir has lived in Brazil for more than 20 years. He's co-editor at Brazil Wire and editor of the new book, Year of Lead, Washington, Wall Street, and the New Imperialism in Brazil. We'll hear from Brian Meir about what's up in Brazil in just a moment, but first, a quick look back at some recent press. Donald Trump responded predictably to The Way They See Us, Ava DuVernay's filmic illustration of what was already known, that five African-American teenagers imprisoned for the 1989 assault on a woman jogging in Central Park were wrongly convicted after coerced confessions. They were fully exonerated in 2002